10.
I don't know,
Tibor McMaster said.
I'll have to...
He became silent, pondering.
Maybe I should turn back,
he thought.
In fact, maybe I've already gone too far. There have been several attempts to kill me. Maybe I should heed the hints. Maybe reality is trying to tell me something. Wait,
he said, still pondering to himself, still not answering the bird. Let me tell you a little more, the bird said. There is someone following you. Pete, his name is.
Still?
Tibor said. He did not feel surprise, only a dull sense of alarm.
Why?
He demanded.
What for?
I can't determine that, the bird said thoughtfully. You will find out presently, I would think. In any case, he means you no harm, as the expression goes. How goes it with you, Mr. Tibor? Can you tell me now? Tibor said,
Can you tell me what will happen if I come across the God of Wrath? Will he kill me, or anyhow try to kill me?
He will not know at first who you are or why you have found him, the bird declared. Take it from me, Mr. Tibor. He no longer believes that, how shall I say it? That anyone malignly oriented is still on his trail. Too many years have gone by.
I suppose so,
Tibor said. He took a deep, shuddering breath to fortify himself.
Where is he? He said aloud. Take me in that direction, but very slowly.
100 miles north of here, the bird said. You will either find him or someone who looks like him. I'm not sure which it is.
Why can't you tell?
Tibor asked.
I thought you'd know everything.
The bird's poor mentality depressed him.
I have sipped on the worm slime, he thought, and I have escaped from a series of dangers. And what did I get out of it? Almost nothing,
he realized. A bird that partially talks, that partially knows something.
Like myself, he thought. We each know a little. Maybe if I can add what this bird knows to what I know, sui generis, I can try. How does he look?
He asked the bird. Pretty bad, the bird answered.
How?
The bird said. He has bad breath, his teeth are missing and yellow, he is stoop-shouldered, and he is old and fat. Thus must you draw your mural.
I see,
Tibor said. Well, so it went. The God of Wrath was as much a prey to mortal decline as anyone else. All at once, he had become all too human. And how would that help the mural?
Is there nothing exalted about him?
Tibor asked. Maybe I have the wrong man, the bird said. No, there is nothing exalted about him, sorry to say.
Christ!
Tibor said bitterly. As I say, the bird said, I may well have the wrong man. I suggest you take a long, close look at him yourself and rely on what you determine, not on what I've said either way.
Maybe so,
Tibor murmured. He still felt depressed. Too much plucked at him, and too much lay ahead. Better to turn around and go back, he decided. To get out of this while he still could. He had been lucky. But perhaps his luck had drained away. After all, he could not continue testing it forever. You think your luck has run out? The bird said perceptively. I can assure you it hasn't. That's one thing I do know. You will be all right. Trust me.
How can I trust you if you don't even know it's him?
The bird said, nodding. I see what you mean. But I still stick with what I say. Your luck has not run out, not at all. Give me credit for knowing that, at least.
What kind of bird are you?
Tibor asked. A blue jay.
Are blue jays generally reliable?
Very much so, the bird said. By and large, Tibor said.
Are you the exception that proves the rule?
No, The bird hopped from its perch and came swooping down to land on Tibor's shoulder.
"Consider this," the bird said. "Who else can you depend on if you can't or don't depend on me? I have waited many years for you to appear. I knew a long time ago that you would be coming this way. And when I heard your hymns, I found myself overcome by joy. That was why you heard me then, caroling your happy songs. I especially like the old 100. In point of fact, that's my favorite. So don't you think you can trust me?"
"Quite certainly a bird that sings hymns should be trusted," Tibor decided aloud.
"And I am that bird!" The jay fluttered up into the air, with impatience visible in every trembling feather. What a beautiful, large, blue and white bird, Tibor thought to himself as he watched it ascend.
"I'm positive I can trust it, and there's no real alternative. Perhaps I'll have to go many places, see many men who are not the Deus Irae, before I find the overwhelming, the authentic one. Such is a pilg."
"But I can't follow you,"
Tibor pointed out,
"because of my dry wheel bearing. I doubt if the mucus..."
"It works very well," the bird said. "You'll be able to follow me." It hopped off and disappeared into a nearby tree. "Come on!" Tibor started his cart into motion. He nudged the patient cow, and off he and the cow went, rumbling north. Blue sky and long-shafted warm sunlight spilled down on them as they progressed. Evidently, in the light of day, many of the more unusual life forms preferred to remain hidden. Tibor found himself encountering no one, and somehow this distressed him more than the parade of sports and freaks and Chardin, which he found himself facing during the nocturnal hours.
But, he thought, anyhow, I can see the bird clearly,
which was essential. This higher stage entity, it was his lodestar now.
"Nobody lives along this way?"
he asked as the cow paused for a moment of cropping the tall reddish weeds.
"They just wish to survive in deserved anonymity," the bird said.
"Are they that dreadful?"
"Yes," the bird said. It added, "to conventional eyes."
"Worse than runners and lizards and bugs?"
"Even worse." The bird did not seem to be afraid. It hopped and skipped about on the leaf-soaked ground, finding bits of nut here and there to gorge itself as well as possible.
"There's one,"
the bird said.
"That..."
"Don't tell me,"
Tibor said.
"Well, you asked."
"I asked," Tibor said, "but I didn't want or expect an answer."
He flicked the cow, and once more the big animal lurched forward to continue their journey. Pleased, the bird spun upward into the dark blue sky. It fluttered off, and the cow, as if understanding their relationship to the bird, followed.
"Is he evil-looking?"
Tibor asked the bird. "The god of wrath?" The bird dropped like a stone, landing on one edge of Tibor's cart.
"He is, how shall I say it, not ordinary looking. Yes, one could say that. Not ordinary looking in any respect. A large man, but, as I said, a man with bad breath. A powerfully built man, but stooped by neurotic cares. An elderly man, but..."
"And you're not even sure it's him?"
"Reasonably sure,"
the bird said, unruffled. Tibor said,
"He lives in a human settlement?"
"Right," the bird said, pleased. "With about 60 other men and women, none of whom know who he is."
"How did he make himself known to you?"
Tibor said.
"How did you recognize him if they couldn't? Is there a stigma of any sort?"
He hoped there was. It would make the painting that much easier, once he had painted the stigma in.
"Just the stigma of death and despair,"
the bird declared carelessly as it tripped about here and there. "It's profound, as you will see when we get there." Tibor glanced up at the bird, who now hovered slightly ahead of him, and said,
"And you have nothing more definite than that to go on?"
"I saw him 2 years ago, the bird said, "for the first time.
Since then, I have often seen him, but my tongue was tied in a knot up till no more than an hour ago. I could speak to no one, really. And then you sipped of the worm slime and learned to understand my words.
Interesting,
Tibor said, urging the cow on.
But you didn't answer the question.
I tried,
the bird said.
Look, Mr. Tibor, you don't have to follow me. No one's making you go. I'm just doing this as a public service. I'm not getting anything out of it, except overstrained wing muscles.
It flapped at him angrily. The wood through which they moved had begun to thin now. Far ahead he saw mountains, or perhaps only large hills. Their sides had turned from green to a pale straw color. Here and there, dark blackish-green clumps showed up, evidently trees. Between Tibor and the hills lay a long, fertile-looking valley. He saw roads, functioning to some extent, and, on one of the roads, a vehicle of sorts. It putt-putted along, its sound rising noisily in the cool air of morning. And a settlement, where three of the roads combined. Not a large settlement, but unusual by present standards. Many of the buildings appeared to be fairly large, stores or factories, perhaps. Commercial buildings, including what seemed to be a small airfield.
There, the bird informed him. New Brunswick, Idaho,
the bird said.
That's because we crossed the state line, the bird added. We were in Oregon, but now we're in Idaho, you dig?
Tibor said.
Yes.
He flicked the cow and it resumed its great hoofed march. Now the wheel bearings had begun to squeal and knock again. He heard them, but he thought,
I can make it to the town, and there I probably can locate a blacksmith who can insert a new bearing unit, possibly one for each wheel. Because if one is running dry, the others must be nearly dry too. But how much money would it cost? Can you get the repair work on my cart at wholesale prices?
He asked the bird.
That doesn't exist anymore, the bird said. There are no factories, just self-contained enclaves, such as you see here. I can find a competent repairman, however. There's at least two in New Brunswick who specialize in repairing pre-war equipment.
My cart is post-war,
Tibor said.
They can fix that, too!
And the cost?
Maybe we can barter,
the bird said.
Too bad you didn't pick up some of the valuables of the worm. You could have walked off with any and all of them.
Junk,
Tibor said. And then, amazed, he said,
You mean that such rubbish is considered valuable out here?
They must be far behind our level, he realized.
And I'm still close to home. That close, and everything is different. How isolated we are. How little we know. How much has been lost.
The bed springs would have been worth bringing here, the bird said. The handyman in the town can use the steel to make tools of several sorts, knives, picks, a variety of things.
And the transistor radio? When there's nothing on the air?
The unit could be adapted to form an anti-fertility generator to be operated during sexual intercourse.
God.
Tibor said, appalled.
You mean they're curbing the birth rate? When the population of the world is down to a few million?
Because of the altered's being born, the bird said. Like yourself, if you don't mind my saying so. They would, in New Brunswick, rather have no births than have ugly, deformed mutations spawned all around them,
Tibor said.
Maybe they'll drive me out as soon as they see me.
Very possibly.
The bird agreed. It fluttered on, down the slope of the hill, toward the flat floor of the valley beneath. As they descended, the bird prattled on, telling of the strange and frightening and fascinating alters that had been born in the area during the past few years. Tibor barely listened. The rough jolting of the cart, its front right wheel stuck, made him ill. He shut his eyes and, trying to relax, prayed for relief from his nausea. Part of it, he realized, is fear.
My fear, it's showing up in New Brunswick, a place I've never been before. What will it be like? finding myself surrounded by strangers. What if I can't understand, and they can't understand me?
And then he thought,
New Brunswick.
Maybe he would find someone who still remembered German. That would help, if the tongue hadn't evolved or devolved too far. Blithely, the blue jay described various alters he had seen during his life.
And some have a single eye in the center of their head. Cyclopism, I believe it's called. And with others, when they are born, their hide is cracked and dried, and sprouting a heavy coat of dark, coarse fur that covers the baby.
And then there was one where its fingers came out of its chest. It had no arms, just like you, and no legs, just the fingers protruding from the ribcage. It lived almost a year, I understand.
Could it wiggle the fingers?
Tibor asked.
It made obscene gestures from time to time, but no one was really sure that it was intentional.
Tibor roused himself from his retracted state.
Were there any more types that you can remember?
Now and then the subject morbidly fascinated him, perhaps because of his own problem.
What about Jirians? Any of them, the three-in-ones?
I have seen Jirian three-in-ones, the bird said, but not at New Brunswick. Farther to the north, where more radiation drifted. And in addition, I saw one time a human ostrich. That is, long, spindly legs, a feathered body, then naked neck up to—
That's enough,
Tibor said, too unwell to listen to any more. The bird cackled.
Let me tell you the best I've ever seen. In all the places I've ever been, it consists of an external brain, which is carried in a bucket or jar, still functioning, with a dense saran wrap to protect it from the atmosphere and to keep the blood from draining off. And the owner had to constantly watch it to see if it hadn't been dealt a traumatic jolt. That one lived indefinitely, but his whole life was spent in—
No more,
Tibor managed. His nausea had won out over his morbid interest. He again closed his eyes and settled back against the seat behind him. They continued on in silence. All at once, the sized-up front right wheel of the cart came off. It rolled away and disappeared below them. The cart came to a sudden stop as the cow halted, aware that its burden had undergone a fundamental alteration. Tibor said thick-tonguedly,
Well, that ends it all for me.
He had anticipated this off and on during his life, and on this pill he particularly felt its closeness. Worry had become a doorway to the real, all at once. It had been an irrational fear that actually worked itself out in reality. He felt animal terror, as if he had been caught in a trap, by his foot, if he had had a foot. The animal gnaws its leg off, he thought in overwhelming panic, to get away.
But there's nothing I can do. I have no leg to gnaw off. There's nothing I can do to save myself.
I'll get help, the bird said. Except...
It flew down and came to rest on Tibor's shoulder.
You're the only one who can understand me. Write a note and I'll deliver it.
With his right manual extensor, Tibor got out a black leather notebook and ballpoint pen. He wrote,
I, Tibor McMasters, and incomplete, am trapped on the hillside in my ruined cart. Follow the bird. Okay,
he said. He folded the paper and held it up. The blue jay seized it with his beak, and then, pumping himself up into the warm morning air, he streaked off toward the valley below and its human, or near-human, inhabitants. Silence.
Maybe I'll never move forward again,
Tibor said to himself.
My grave here, the tomb for my ambitions, or rather the ambitions of others operating through me. Yes, my ambitions too,
he realized.
I didn't have to come here. I knew the dangers, and yet I came here. So it's really my fault. To come here and die, so close to what I'm seeking for, assuming that this was the right place to come. Screw it,
he said aloud. The cow turned questioningly. Savagely, he flicked at it with his pseudo-whip. The cow mooed and tried to walk ahead, but the front axle dug deep into the ground and brought the forward motion to an abrupt halt.
All I can do is wait,
he realized.
If the bird doesn't come back, or doesn't bring someone with it, then I'm dead. Here, in this ordinary spot. I journeyed here to die. And the god of wrath will never be found, at least not by me. And now what?
He asked himself. He examined his watch. The time was 9:30.
If they're coming at all, they should be here by 11, he decided. If they're not here by then...
Then, he thought,
I will give up. I would have liked to see you, Jirion,
he said aloud as if to the cow.
Maybe I ought to let you go,
he pondered.
No, if they do come with help, I will need you. Cow, cow,
he quoted.
I and thou.
He would have liked to go on with the James Stevens poem, but he could not remember any more. Looking in each other's eyes? Was that it?
How banal,
he thought.
Strange,
he thought, how at crucial and unfortunate times one relies not on great poetry, but on doggerel.
When that one great scorer comes to total up your name, it's not whether you won or lost, but how you played the game. That's it,
he realized. Poetry, even great poetry, couldn't be any better.
I've played the game with honesty and skill,
he informed himself.
If wishes were horses, then beggars might ride,
he quoted aloud. Silence, except for the breathing of himself and the cow. The animal still strained to reach some lush weeds not far off.
You're hungry,
he said to her.
So am I,
he thought. And then he thought,
that is how both of us will die, of thirst and hunger. We will drink our own urine to stay alive a little longer,
he realized.
And it won't help. My life depends on a creature small enough to fit in my hand,
he thought.
A mutant jaybird. And jays are noted for their lying, stealing ways. A jay is virtually a convict. Why couldn't it have been a thrush?
He thought then of a thought which had buffeted him for years. A picture of a creature. Some kind of fairly small, furred animal. The animal, silently and alone at its burrow, would build gay and complex oddities, which eventually, when there were enough, it at last carried to a nearby road. There it would set up shop, spreading out on each side of it the things it had made. It sat there in silence all day, waiting for someone to come along and buy one of the things it had made. Time would pass. Afternoon would disappear into evening. The world would darken, but the creature had not sold any of its creations. At last, in the glooming, it would wordlessly, meekly, gather up its oddities and go off with them, defeated, but voicing no complaint. Yet its defeat was total, despite the fact that the defeat came slowly amid silence. As he himself sat here, waiting, he would, like the creature, wait and wait. The world would grow dark. Then lighten the next day. And so it would go, again, until at last he would not awaken with the sun. There would be no more silent hope, only an inert body slumped in the seat of the cart.
I must let the cow loose eventually,
he realized.
But I'll keep her here as long as I can. It is reassuring to see another creature,
he decided.
At least as long as it's not suffering. Are you suffering?
He wondered.
No, you don't understand. For you, it's only a period of immobility, with no recognition of what the immobility signifies.
Lord of Wrath,
he said aloud, voicing the familiar liturgy.
Come to me, scourge me over all, and take me with you to country. Place me among the ranks of the great florist.
He waited, eyes shut. No response.
Are you with me?
He asked.
Sir, you who have done so much, you who control all suffering, redeem me from my present suffering. You made it happen. You are responsible for my travail. Lift me out of it as only you can do, Deus Irae.
At that he paused and waited. Still, no response, either in the world outside him or in the internal realm of his mind.
I will consult, hell, not consult, beg the older god to appear,
he told himself. The defeated, vestigial religion of our forefathers.
Agnus Dei, qui tollis peccata mundi, dona, eis requiem sempiternum.
Still, nothing. Neither had helped. But his ways are sometimes slow, he reflected. His time is not our time. For him, it may be only a blink of the eye.
Libera me domine! I give up,
he said aloud and felt himself, his body, do so. All at once he was tired. In fact, he could not hold his head up.
Maybe this is the release I asked for,
he thought.
Maybe he will give me a nice death, a painless one, swift and quiet. A sort of going to sleep, as they used to provide sick or injured pet animals whom they loved. Tremens factus sum, ego timeo.
Bits and pieces of the old mass, or was it from a medieval poem, a Catholic requiem?
Mors stupebit, et natura, cum resurgit, creatura, judicanti, responsural.
He could remember nothing more. The hell with it, he decided. They never come when you want them, he told himself. A great clear light formed in the sky above him. He peeped, half-blinded, shielding his eyes with the terminal of his left manual gripper. The clear light sank toward him. Now it had become smoky red, a billowing, nebulous disk that seemed heated up and inflamed, angry from within. And now it could be heard, a sizzling racket like rushing wind or something white-hot being plunged furiously into water. A few initial warm drops of moisture dripped down on him. The particles scalded him, and instinctively he shoved his body aside. The disk above him grew into a more formed but still plastic state. He could make out features on its surface, eyes, a mouth, ears, tangled hair. The mouth was screaming at him, but he could not make out the words.
What?
He said, still gazing upward. He saw now that the face was angry at him. What had he done to displease it? He did not even know who or what it was.
You mock at me!
The shifting, vibrating, weepy face roared.
I am a candle to you, a dim light leading into light. See what I can do to save you if I wish. How easy it is.
The mouth of the face bubbled with words.
Pray!
The face demanded.
On your hands and knees!
But,
Tibor said,
I have no hands or knees.
It is mine to do,
the great lit-up face said. Tibor all at once found himself lifted upward, then set down hard on the grass by the cart. Legs! He was kneeling. He saw the long, mobile forms, two of them, supporting him. He saw, too, his arms and hands, on which the top portion of his frame rested, and his feet.
You,
Tibor gasped,
are Carlton Lufteufel.
Only the god of wrath could do what had just been achieved.
Pray,
the face instructed. Tibor said, mumbling his words.
I have never mocked the greatest entity in the universe. I beg not for forgiveness, but for understanding. If you knew me better.
I know you, Tibor,
the face declared.
Not really. Not completely. I am a complex person, and theology itself is complex these days. I have done no worse than anyone else. In fact, much better than most. Do you understand that I am on a pilg, searching for your physical identity, so that I can paint—
I know!
The god of wrath interrupted.
I know what you know, and a great many more things besides. I sent the bird. I caused you to travel close enough to the worm so that he would come out and try to gnaw on you. Do you understand that? It was I who made your right front wheel bearings go out. You have been in my power all this time. Throw out your pilg!
Ebor, using his new hands, reached into the storage compartment of the cart and whipped out an instant color pack Polaroid land camera. He took a quick shot of the moaning face above him, then waited impatiently for the ring to sound.
You did what? The mouth demanded. You took a photograph of me?
Yes,
Ebor said.
To see if you're real.
And for other very real reasons.
I am real!
The mouth spat out its rebuttal.
Why have you done all these things?
Tibor asked.
What is there so important about me?
You are not important, but your pilg is. You intend to find me and kill me!
No!
Tibor shot back.
Just to photograph you!
He grabbed the edge of the print and dragged it out of the protesting camera. The picture showed the wild, frenzied face absolutely clearly, beyond any possibility of doubt. It was Carlton Lufteufel, the man he had searched for, the man who lay at the far end of his God-knew-how-long pilg. The pilg was over.
You are going to use that?
The Deus Irae inquired.
That snapshot? No, I do not like it!
A quiver of his chin. And, in Tibor's right hand, the print shriveled up, let loose a plume of smoke, and fell quietly to the ground in the form of ashes.
And my arms and legs?
Tibor said, panting.
Mine too!
The god of wrath studied him, and, as he did so, Tibor found himself rising like a rag doll. He landed on his ass in the driver's seat of the cart. And, at the same moment, his legs, his feet, his arms, his hands, all vanished. Once again, he was limbless. He sat there in his seat, panting in frenzy. For a few seconds, he had been like everyone else. It was the ultimate moment for Tibor. Restitution for an entire life led in this useless condition.
God,
he managed to say presently.
Do you see?
The god of wrath demanded.
Do you understand what I can do?
Tibor grated.
Yes.
Will you terminate your pilg?
He hesitated.
No,
he said after a pause.
Not yet. The bird said,
I was that bird! I know what I said!
The god's anger softened, momentarily, anyhow.
The bird led you closer to me, close enough for me to greet you myself as I wanted to, as I had to do. I have two bodies. One you are seeing now. It is eternal, uncorruptible, like the body Christ appeared in after the resurrection, when Timothy met him and pushed his hand into Christ's womb.
Side, Tibor said, into his side, and it was Thomas.
The god of wrath darkened cloudily. His features began to become transparent.
You have seen this guise, the god of wrath declared. This body!
But there is also another body, a physical body which grows old and decays, a corruptible body, as Paul put it. You must not find that.
Do you think I'll destroy it? Tibor said.
Yes.
The face disappeared, barely speaking its last word. The sky, once again blue, formed a hollow bowl vault erected by giants or by gods. From some deep-seated early period on the earth, perhaps back in the Cambrian period. After a moment, Tibor let go of his derringer. Sitting in his cart, he had held it out of sight. What would have happened, he conjectured, if I'd tried to kill him? Nothing, he decided.
The body I saw him in was undoubtedly what he claimed it to be, a manifestation of something incorruptible. I never could have tried,
he realized.
It was a bluff.
But the god of wrath didn't know that, unless, of course, he was omnipotent, as the Christians believe their God to be.
What in the name of God would it be if I had killed him?
He asked himself. How the world would feel without him? There is so damn little to cling to these days.
Anyhow, the bastard left, he said to himself. So I didn't have to. At least not this time. I would kill him under certain circumstances,
he realized suddenly. But what circumstances? He shut his eyes, rubbed them with his manual extensor, scratched his nose.
If he were trying to destroy me?
Not necessarily. It had to do more with the complexities of Lufteufel's mind, rather than with outside circumstances. The God of Wrath had personality. He was not a force. Sometimes he labored for the good of man, and back in the war days, he had virtually annihilated mankind. He had to be propitiated. That was the key. Sometimes the God of Wrath descended to do good. At other times, evil.
I could kill him if he was acting out of malice. But if he was doing good, even if it cost me my life, I'd do it. Grandiose,
he ruminated.
The pride, hubris, the all-puffed-up syndrome. It's not for me,
he decided.
I've always lain low. Somebody else, a Lee Harvey Oswald type, can go in for the big kills, the ones that really mattered.
He sighed. Well, so it went. But this was special. In all his years as a servant of Wrath, he had never possessed a mystical event, had never found God by any means, really. It's like finding out that Hayden was a woman. It just isn't possible to lay it aside after it's happened. And also, true mystical experiences changed the beholder, as William James pointed out in Another World at another time.
He gave me my missing parts, he thought. Legs, arms, and then he took them back. How can a deity do that?
It was, put very simply, sadistic. To have arms, to look like everyone else, not to be an upright trunk in a cow cart.
I could run, he thought, through seawater, at the ocean beaches, and with my hands I would fashion a variety of objects. Think how well I could paint! Most of my creative limitations come from the damn apparatus I have to use. I could be so much more,
he told himself.
Will the Chardin Blue Jay come back?
He wondered. If it was a manifestation of the Deus Ire, then probably it won't.
In that case, he asked himself, what should I do?
Nothing. Well, he could shout in his bullhorn. Experimentally, he fished out the bullhorn, snapped the switch on, and said boomingly,
now hear this! Now hear this! Tibor McMasters is caught in the hills and expects to die! Can you help me? Does anybody hear this?
He clicked off the bullhorn, sat for a moment. Nothing else he could do, nothing at all. He sat slumped over in his cart, waiting.